It's the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Now here's your host of the WJR Gardening Show, Ann Thomas.
Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here with Rick and Tyler Vespa. And Tyler, this is going to be very interesting to learn about gardening today.
You know, Ann, I'm the garden pharmacist, and everything's always changing out there. Bring your samples to me, and we'll figure out what's wrong.
And Rick, this is going to be a fascinating show, because people are going to learn everything they need to know to have an absolutely beautiful garden this summer.
Right. You know, the garden pharmacist has a tough job because it goes from soup to nuts. It's about the right plant for the right place, watering, you have insects, diseases, you have fertilizers and soil amendments. There's a lot to know. It's a lot of science behind growing plants the best possible way. Oh, and let's not forget those pesky critters that hamper our goal.
An interesting and informative show coming up next. Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here with Rick Vespa, the president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Tyler Vespa, the English Gardens pharmacist. So in this first segment, Rick Vespa, we are going to talk a little bit about the garden pharmacy. Ever since I've heard about the garden pharmacy, I love this concept. I think it's just awesome. But there's a history behind it. So talk a little bit about that.
You know, English Gardens was built by listening to our customers. They come in and ask us for services, for products. And one of those things was they'd come in with plant problems. And over the years, we've developed the whole garden pharmacy concept with plant scriptions, which are tell you what to use and how to use it. But the first thing is a good diagnosis of what's wrong. And sometimes things seem obvious and they're not. Somebody says it's something white. Well, there's so many different things it could be, you know. So we like to see a sample. But anyway, this all started when years ago, people were coming into the stores asking us to solve their plant problems. And, you know, I glommed onto that and said, you know, we need to develop this further. Get some written materials together. We bought these simple eyeglasses to look closer at the leaves at the time.
Sure.
Eventually, we went to a microscope. But anyway, a whole process that we developed around the customer demand, essentially.
So it's so important, I think, to point out that the way you started this and started this business was by paying attention to the customer and really caring about what the customer needed with regard to what they had in their garden.
Absolutely. You know, as the dad started the business to fill a demand for gardening products, mainly plants at the time, but over the years we've built our entire business in many categories in our stores based on what customers came in asking for.
Such a great idea. Now, Tyler, how does the garden pharmacy work? So what happens? How can I use the garden pharmacy?
So you can either come in with a picture on your phone. We use the pictures a lot now with the high-end phones that we have.
Sure.
We all have them, so that's always great. Sometimes we can learn more from a picture than the sample, but putting the sample under the microscope is our go-to, and it works really well. And that way we can always kind of have a open conversation with the customer and actually figure out what the root of the problem is.
So talk a little bit about the sample. How do I give you a sample?
So the bigger the sample, the better. You can take a large leaf, and we like to have samples of not just dead stuff, but almost samples that kind of look yellow. Because we want to see a sample that actually has some of either the insect or the fungus on it. So that's difficult when it's just obviously a dead leaf or a stick, because we're kind of knowing something's there, but it's hard. obviously harder to diagnose.
That makes sense.
And remember, you know, the plant problems go from soup to nuts. It can be insects, diseases. It could be watering problems. I think we're going to get more into some of that. But it can be a number of different things causing problems for your plants. So what Tyler's describing is we want to see the progression. We want to see a sample that shows the progression or the damage, but not just a dead a leaf or a branch.
Can I also do it with the lawn, too?
Can
you take a look at a lawn? And in the same way, you want like a little bit of healthy lawn and a little bit of diseased lawn?
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah, right on the money.
Yeah.
Like a 6-inch square, what do you ask for usually?
Yeah, 6 inches.
Square of sod, cut it out, roots and all, bring it in, and we can take a look at it. Right on the border of the problem area.
Yeah. And how long does the process take for you to take a look at it once I've dropped it off with you?
So we do a lot of it on like live.
Usually on demand.
It's first come, first serve. So we try to do it quickly and methodically at the same time, which can be difficult, but that's what we're there for.
So. Absolutely, yeah. So what are some of the common problems that you see with regard to these samples?
Fungus, insects, overwatering and underwatering. Not enough sunlight, and I would say nutrient deficiency are probably the top 5 or 6.
And how do you solve this? Like the common problems, like the underwatering, we know, please water a little more. Overwatering, back off.
So insects are a little bit more difficult because if I find a bug on the plant, I'm going to recommend you spray it once every few weeks, starting off, because we got to get them off of there. And then as far as fertilizer, it just depends on what the plan is, and then according to the instructions on whatever product of fertilizer you buy. So it's different for the type of plant you're going to get for as far as, like, trying to green it up or make it grow a little faster or bigger.
That makes sense, too.
You know, one thing I can share with you from doing this for years, and I still do it in the store when I have a chance. I love waiting on customers, so I'll come over and work next to Tyler or any of the other stores. But it's can be frustrating at time being the pharmacist and having people coming in looking for solutions, sometimes expecting too much too fast, and it's not necessarily that way. It may take multiple applications. It may take some things they never anticipated they needed to do. There's a lot of science behind it. You know, they're from what kinds of chemicals to use to how to use them safely, not only for people but for pollinators. It's interesting that a lot of things we recommend are pollinator safe if they're used at the right time and the right place. So, again, there's an awful lot of information that's given, you know, in this area, in the garden pharmacy.
Well, another thing that we've talked about a lot on this show is the differences in soil in this area. Like, some people might have a lot of clay. Other people might have a lot of sand. Are you able to address that issue, too?
Oh, yeah. So when people come in, we give them a soil, the results of their soil test. So we do a pH test that's $5.99 and a full test that's $15. And then, as you said, most soil around here is very heavy clay. So generally speaking, that would be gypsum and sulfur to lower that pH because we're trying to make the soil a more neutral pH instead of alkaline. And then I did have a guy this year I did a sample for, and he had an area in his yard that had both an alkaline area and a very acidic area.
That's interesting.
Which was very, most of the time if it's on the same property, it's the same. You know, the pH is going to be identical.
Could be related to previous treatments of soil amendments or elements, adding sulfur or that kind of thing to the soil. Could be an area where there's more organic material, maybe leaves were left that resulted in a higher more acidic, you know, test, but they're different. They're clearly in Metro Detroit. You can go. I live on a sand dune. I think I mentioned this in the last show.
Yes, I remember you talking about this.
If you go around Metro Detroit, there's all kinds of different soil veins, I guess is what you call them. So you can run into, you know, vast differences.
So how would you handle a sand issue then?
Well, first of all, sand is sort of it's a soil structure issue, and that's another thing. So when you have clay, you have heavy soil that compacts, sticks together, repels water, so it can get as hard as concrete. But if you dig a hole in it, it becomes a bucket and holds water. So anyway, we have all kinds of amendments and things like that we can talk about, from fertilizers to key elements to organic materials that you can add to change the soil structure and the nutrients and pH.
Let's take a quick break, and we will continue this conversation on the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens, in just a few minutes.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, and I am here today with Rick and Tyler Vespa, and we are talking about how to make sure you have the right soil for gardening to have a beautiful garden this summer. And Tyler, I want you to talk a little bit more about people out in our audience who are dealing with maybe a little bit too much sand on their property. What do you think they should do?
So sandy soil should be amended with either peat moss or compost, and those two things are going to blend well with the sand to make it so it's not too loose. And then that way everything will grow, and then we can go back to starting the plants.
Starting of the plants. So at what point should we be doing that? So we're at the end of May. When do you like to see people kind of analyzing and getting their soil ready for planting?
So if you start doing get the samples too early, we don't want, you know, obviously like frozen soil. But I would say within the month of April is probably the earliest you should get a sample, and then that way we can start tackling it before it gets too late as well.
Now, you both are talking about elements. What does that mean in the gardening world?
So sulfur is used to amend alkaline soil to lower it. Lime is used to raise the pH if it's too acidic. And then after that, we also offer the full test, which is we do the nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And the nitrogen is for greening stems and leaves. The potassium is for fruits or for roots and vigor, and the phosphorus is for fruits and flowers.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, is there a difference between a flowering garden and how you handle a vegetable garden?
Yes.
Product-wise?
Oh, yeah. So when we recommend fertilizers for both those areas, typically I want to do a slow-release fertilizer for the vegetables, typically an organic one, and usually you can do those every few weeks. With the flower garden, I like the water-soluble fertilizers for the annuals, like your bloom builders. So each plant is going to get a different makeup in what type of fertilizer and where it's derived from.
So that kind of leads me to this question of how do I do this, like, step by step? I know that I have the soil analyzed. You come back, you tell me what needs to be done. Do I then put a certain amount of the product on it, and how long do I wait, and when is it safe to plant the flowers?
So typically we recommend amending the soil to change the pH about once a month. So
oh, really?
The sulfur and lime, if you're way too high or too low, once a month you can amend the soil with either the lime or the sulfur. And then it takes about a year for those results to really fill in. So I have people that both amend before they plant and then after they plant, because really it's not going to be done for the until the following year for the optimal results.
And what about with regard to elements? Same thing?
So the fertilizer that we recommend is going to vary, but typically the organic ones will have like a month to 2 week recommendation, whereas the bloom builders, you definitely got to stick to every week or 2 weeks. So anything that's like a flower, like a petunia, they need fertilizer to rebloom every week or two.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So to separate the two, we were talking about elements at first. Those are the things Tyler was saying take a long time, sometimes maybe a season or two to actually amend the pH of the soil. The fertilizers, the NPK, that's something I like to look at. I call it the rule of threes. Mm. So when you're planting, I recommend, and this varies a little bit for the type of planting you're doing, but in general, when you're planting, you use a root stimulator, like Biotone is one of the ones we recommend, and that has nutrients in it, micronutrients, and mycorrhizae, which helps develop roots. So it's a starter fertilizer. It's very low dosage organic fertilizer with this mycorrhizae in it.
Going in before you plant?
While you're planting.
Wow, okay.
Yes. And then Osmocote, which is a time-release fertilizer, and that also can go in when you're planting. I like when I plant bedding plants, for instance, annuals and perennials, I will use this process right in while I'm planting. Sometimes put it all on top of the bed, turn it into the soil, and then plant the plants right in the soil that's already been fertilized. So root stimulator, Osmocote, and then Tyler was recommending or talking about the Bloom Builder, which is a water soluble. And that you mix in water and you water your plants with it. You can even spray it on the leaves. And that is a weekly, I'm sorry, I'm getting out of order here. So that's a weekly or every 10 days or every 2 weeks, depending on who you talk to. Some people use it more frequently. But you really can't over-fertilize annuals in Michigan because of the short growing season. So you have the root stimulator that goes in when you're planting. Osmocote, which is a time release. This is what I forgot to say. And that is, 4 month feeding? So that feeds all during the growing season, but it's very low dosage again. And then your water soluble is like a quick shot in the arm. And that comes every, you know, like I said, week, 10 days, 2 weeks, however you prefer.
Now talk a little bit about container gardening. Is it the same process for container gardening, or how does that work?
So each product we will have a specific direction on the back of the bag for potted or container plants. So 99% of the things that we sell should have a small section where it'll say potted plants, and we always got to be careful for sure that we're not putting the same amount that we would in the ground for a plant as we are in a container, because right. It definitely changes.
Yep,
for sure.
And explain why the change. Is it kind of like a chemistry experiment?
The pot is a contained environment, so it's you can't, it has no room to grow past a certain point. And so burn is what I would refer to as what would happen if you overdid it. The plant would burn.
Oh, that's good to know.
So one thing that's really important that we need to mention here is that don't ignore your soil. This whole thing has been about soil, and that is the most important thing because that's what the plants are growing in, right? And in containerized potted plants, things you're putting in containers, you want new soil in those pots every year. And I'm not just trying to sell more soil. I'm trying to tell you, this is the right thing to do for a number of reasons. You can have nutrients build up, salts build up as a result of the fertilizer, and that's not good for plants long term. So changing out the soil in containers is very, very important. It can also compact and cause drainage problems. So there's a number of reasons to change your soil every year.
I think this is really good advice, both with regard to prepping the soil ahead of time. I have a personal experience with this. So my soil is clay. You know, I can tell just by touching it that there's a lot of clay in the soil. But I hadn't talked to English Gardens about this, so I had no idea what I was doing. So I thought, well, I'll just kind of chop it up a little bit and I'll plant the flowers. And I planted rows and rows of impatiens. Well, about halfway through the season, they looked, I don't know how to describe it, but they looked unwell, very, very sick. And now I know exactly why. They just were not getting enough of the nutrients that you're talking about.
So when you have clay soil and you fertilize, the nutrients don't work. They're not very well, at least.
And that is chemistry. Sure.
That is
so when
chemistry.
You have alkaline, a lot of nutrients won't be absorbed into the plants. So you need to correct that pH in order for the fertilizer to actually work.
Great advice. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about some of the insect and pest problems that you see, especially at this time of year and as we move into the summer. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. We'll be back right after these messages. Are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens on 760 WJR. I'm Ann Thomas. I am here with Rick Vespa, the president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Tyler Vespa, the English Gardens pharmacist. And Tyler, in the last segment, we talked a little bit about fertilizer, and there's a really great one out there that you want people to know about.
Yeah, it's called Neptune's Harvest. It is a fish emulsion-based fertilizer, and it works really well. We had one of our managers in the West Bloomfield store use it for her vegetable garden. So obviously, straight organic, being fish emulsion, and just really good stuff.
Just use it for vegetables, or could I use it for
they
my sick impatiens?
They make formulas that are different for everything, but we do have one for rose and flowers from them as well.
That's good to know. Now, Rick, I know you've got a lot of great deals right now for people. Can you kind of run through what's available?
Right. Yeah. You can find our promotions anytime at EnglishGardens.com. But the big ones right now, 40 to 60% off patio furniture, and we pay your sales tax.
That's a good deal.
So, really good deal. And we've got a beautiful assortment right now, so it's a great time to buy your patio furniture. Buy one, get one half off of hanging baskets. That's the single most popular item we sell. So it's a great deal, and it's a very popular promotion. People wait for that one to come through. So, and then red, white, and blue flowers and decor for Memorial Day and 4th of July.
I have been known to take the hanging baskets and take the little hooks off and put them right in my containers on my front porch. I hope that's okay. I know for expert gardeners like the two of you, that might not be good to say, but it works beautifully.
And we actually recommend hanging baskets for all kinds of purposes. One is hanging them. The other one, obviously, the other one is taking the hangers off and putting them in pots, or you can plant flower beds with hanging baskets and get an instant result instead of waiting for the smaller plants to fill in.
Well, and they look beautiful.
Sure.
And it's all done for you.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a good way to go if you're busy.
You know what I forgot to mention? Hanging baskets, they're the most popular item we have. But again, different choices we have. You can get the combos, for instance, and you have a combination planter already done for you. So, we have the monocultures, which are single varieties, and then the combos. So when you're doing combo pots, you have all those options available to you, and you get the quick result.
You've already got the thriller and the filler and the spiller right there for you.
Yep.
So let's turn to this other issue about what are some of the common problems out there for gardeners. And let's look at insects first. What are we often seeing around here, Tyler Vespa, with regard to insects and pests?
So one of the biggest ones is the leaf miner, which is attacks boxwood shrubs mainly, but it can attack everything. When I see samples in the store, most of them are boxwoods that the leaf miner just eat and crunch on them all day.
So that's a bug or an insect?
Yeah. It's an insect, and it gets inside the leaf, and it hatches, and then it starts eating all the leaves, and they eat whole sections of the greenery right out of the bush if you don't have them on check.
And that's something that we have around here.
Correct.
In the state of Michigan?
Yep, very common problem.
And what else? What are some of the other ones?
The other one would be spider mites, which are basically a microscopic spider. They're very impossible to see with the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
And they suck the chlorophyll out of the leaf. So the yellowing leaves can sometimes be a sign of spider mites, and we sell miticides for those. One of my favorite products for both the leaf miner and the spider mite is BioAdvance 3-in-1 Insect Disease and Mite Control.
One of the things we see when after you see spider mites for a while, you kind of know what they look like on the leaf, and it's sort of a hazy look. But one quick test is take a white sheet of paper and dust the leaf over the piece of paper. And if you don't see it readily, you can run your hand over the paper and it will smear red.
Really?
And that is an indication of spider mites, yes.
Now, I know another really common thing around here would be the grubs. So what happens if you detect that somebody has grubs? How do you help them, Tyler?
So it's if they know they have grubs in their soil at the present moment, there's a product called BioAdvance 24-Hour Grub Control, and that stays in the soil actually for a little bit more than 24 hours and kills the grubs instantly. So in about 2 days, you will be grub-free. Now, to prevent grubs, I recommend Scott's GrubX, which you would put down in June so that when you have the Japanese beetle that comes from the lawn and everybody's yards has them, they fly around and then they go and try to relay the eggs for the grub back in the soil in June. And so the whole cycle starts over again.
So June is when you should start paying attention to this?
Correct.
So the grub has a life cycle, and it's a double whammy because it feeds on the roots of your lawn. And it also, the beetles feed on plants like roses and what else, Tyler? All kinds of stuff.
Everything, yeah.
It's a double whammy in the garden. They have a life cycle that starts deep in the ground, and they gradually migrate up into the soil, higher into the soil than into the root zone. And there are different products for treating at different times. So Tyler mentioned one of several products that we sell.
The other one I forgot to mention is the Japanese beetle traps, mm-hmm. which is a bag that you put on. It has a pheromone in it. And you put it on a stick. It's got a hook that you put in the ground and you hang it up in the yard. And so for the beetles themselves that everyone hates because they eat their leaves, you put that in the yard about 20 feet from the plants, and it catches them all. And by the end of the season, that bag is full of all the dead Japanese beetles.
Wow,
so it's
that
a good way
like
to get them
really
all.
Really good way.
One of the few things for bugs that you can get them all at like one time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know another big problem is fungus. And black spot is one of the ones that you're seeing around here. What is that exactly, and how would I know I had it?
So black spot is a fungus you typically see on roses. And it's hard to identify at first, but I would say that Anytime you see a black spot on a leaf, you can almost guarantee that it's the black spot. So the diagnosis appears simple, but treating it can be difficult because it tends to come back based on different weather conditions, rain, temperature, humidity.
That's good to know, too. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to start with the bigger pests out there because I've got a big problem with this. And I've tried everything and I'm still struggling. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. We will be back right after these messages.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
This is the WJR Gardening Show, and I am here today with Rick and Tyler Vespa. We are getting great advice from Rick and Tyler about how to take care of our soil, how to take care of our plants, and how to fight disease and insects. And one of the most interesting things that you brought up during the break, Rick, beneficial insects. I've never heard of this. Can you talk a little bit about this? What does that mean, Tyler?
So we sell ladybugs, live ladybugs, praying mantis, and nematodes. The praying mantis and ladybugs, you need to wet the area a little bit, and then you can place the egg sacs and the ladybugs directly on the plant. I believe for the praying mantis, you actually attach the egg sac somehow to the plant. And they feed on aphids and mealybugs and a lot of other insects that cause chaos in your garden.
I've never heard of this. It's so cool.
It's awesome, and it really cuts down on chemical use. You can put it on a pretty, I think we get them in like late April, early May, so you can start early and get a head start on all those bugs that you would normally spray for.
By the way, Tyler just mentioned chemicals, and I want to mention something else. We sell chemical and biological controls for almost all problems. You can have an organic or an inorganic solution. Some work better than others. But there are many, many good solutions for both approaches. And we need to remember, whatever we use, we follow the label or the instructions that the garden pharmacist gives you. And that can make a big difference for how well it works, as well as that it doesn't affect other things like beneficial insects, like pollinators and things like that. So using stuff the right way is really important.
There's very few things I recommend on a daily basis that are not organic.
I was just going to ask you that. Do you have a preference?
Yes. Most of the time it's going to be organic. Fertilizer, insect killer, fungus. In reality, there's maybe one or two customers a day where I have to recommend something that's more toxic, because otherwise it's just not gonna solve their problem.
But yeah, I think it's just a better word is efficacy. Some of the organics are not strong enough to solve the problem completely. So again, it's a balancing act and choosing the right thing. But even those so-called toxic or chemical stuff, use it the right way is crucial, because the results will be different if you use it the wrong way.
So read the directions the back of these bags or these bottles. Yep. Now, I always talk about this. In fact, a lot of people tease me now because they hear me talking about this on your show. But this area, I'm sorry, we have got a big problem with moles, raccoon, groundhogs, woodchucks, deer. And I know they're part of the environment, so we need to be nice about this. But it seems like they're out of control. What can we do? And the reason I say that is they destroy, like right now, they're destroying my lilac bushes. And I mean destroy. They will eat anything and everything in sight. And it may be unfair to ask both of you how to stop it, but is there any way to control some of it?
So rabbits and deer in particular, the animal repellents for those work really well. So we recommend liquid fence and plant skid as our two most used repellents. And they do a good job if you reapply them every 2 weeks. But keep in mind that the deers and rabbits are smart. They will get used Very. To what you use. So pay attention to how the repellent you use is made. Plant skid is made with blood. Liquid fence is made with egg solids and garlic. And so those two things repel the animal, but because they get used to it, you need to rotate what you use. Some of them are made with mint. Some of them are made with cayenne pepper. So we really need to try to outsmart the animal and go from there.
And I also think that you should apply it after a big rain. I've heard Rick talk a little bit about making sure if it's really rained an awful lot in the area, you better put it back on.
Well, yeah, some of these get absorbed into the plants. Some are granules that may last longer. And then the ones that you spray on the leaves that, you know, are kind of rely on the effectiveness relies on it being there. Those are the ones you got to be careful when you have rain or sprinklers running, that kind of thing. You'll need to reapply.
That's very important. Now, the theme of this show has been all about the environment and how important it is to make sure that the soil is right and that you're putting your plants and your bushes in the right place. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, we talk about, the right plant for the right place. That's crucial. You have sun, wind, water, drainage, you know, too much or not enough water. The space for the plants so things aren't overcrowded. Those are all very, very important. We already talked about earlier in the show soil type. So that's a really important issue. Big one we see, planting too deep or piling mulch on top of plants. We see a lot of that driving up and down the street with the mulch. We call them mulch volcanoes. That's not good for plants. So if you do mulch, which is a good thing, you want to keep the mulch away from the collar or the stems of the plants. And if you mulch every year, if you have buildup, you may want to remove some mulch or, again, just make sure it's not building up around the plants.
Now, Rick, why do you say mulching is a good thing? I mean, I know it looks beautiful, but I bet there's other reasons why.
Well, it keeps moisture in the ground if you need it. Keeps weeds down. Weeds compete for fertilizer and nutrients and water. So mulch is good, and it gives a nice appearance, of course. So it's aesthetic issue as well. But mulching is a very good thing to do for your plants, as long as you keep it away from the stems.
Now, I've also heard great advice from your experts here at English Gardens on how to plant. You mentioned planting too deep. So can either you, Tyler, or you, Rick, explain, A, it's very easy to make sure that you don't plant too deep.
Right.
I've never heard this advice until I started doing the show, and I love it.
Well, we have a planting guide in our store, which will direct you. So, you know, because this is quick and easy, but the guide will show you a diagram, which is most important. So bottom line is you dig a hole roughly the size of the plant, maybe a little bit bigger. You amend the soil. You may add fertilizers. And when I say amend the soil, if you use a soil conditioner, for instance, you mix it with existing soil. You don't pot like you're doing a potted plant. You want an amended soil that you use for plants in the ground. And then the way the plant generally is planted in the pot that you have, or if it's a bald and burlap plant, wherever that soil level is the soil level you want to maintain. You don't bury the plant beyond that. So if a plant needs to be planted up in the air, say in clay soil, you want to mound the plant so that it's the whole plant is elevated and the soil comes up to it.
So the final thing I wanted to say is just on a daily basis, we get a lot of problems with root competition. Mm. And I want to explain what that means. So root competition we see it presented really in two ways. One of them is big trees. Oak trees are a big problem around here. People want to try to grow grass where these tree roots are. Well, when you try to do that, most of the water and nutrients that is trying to get the grass to take root is going into this giant tree. So what we recommend in that situation is a big mulch ring where the tree roots are causing havoc, and you just keep going further away from the base of that tree to where you can plant grass. Typically, that means going outside of the canopy of the tree, which can be 15 or 20 feet.
I wish I could remember the statistic, but they're a large tree, like an oak tree. There's an enormous amount of water that flows from the roots through the tree and out the leaves every day. It's unbelievable. It's worth Googling, but it's an incredible amount of moisture. We forgot to mention light. So right plant for the right place. Sun and shade. That's a whole nother topic in itself, but it is a key item that people need to pay attention to when they're selecting any plants. What's your sun exposure to start with?
Rick and Tyler Vespa, it was great to have you on the show today. Thank you for the wonderful advice.
Thank you, Ann.
You've been listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.